Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the KE Report Weekend Show. Corey and Chad here, your hosts for this weekend's edition. This weekend show is going to be focused on resource investing. We're going to spend the first half of the show talking about mostly precious metals, gold and silver, the stories we've all been reading in the news about gold being repatriated back to the U.S. and the factors driving gold up towards that $3,000 level. Back half of the show, going to be focused on energy companies, oil and natural gas companies, and the investment opportunities between Canada and U.S. domiciled and production-focused companies. Just as a note, please, everyone, go back on your podcast player, through YouTube, and on our website to listen to all our daily editorials and company updates. And if you're liking this show, please hit that subscribe button in YouTube or on your podcast player. All right, let's get into the show, kicking off with Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. Jeff, it's always great having you on the show because, look, you work with a lot of large mining companies. You also very closely study what's driving metals prices. As I said, we're going to focus on the gold trade here. And Jeff, one thing I keep hearing about in the news is all the gold that's being moved back into the U.S. The whole tariffs or potential tariffs are the reason I am hearing that this is happening. I'm wondering what you're seeing out there. Why are we, or are we actually seeing a lot of gold outside of normal amounts being repatriated back into the U.S.?
Yes, except that it's not repatriation. This is gold that hasn't been here. Some of it's been here properly, but a lot of it is coming in. You're seeing a large amount of gold and silver move into the United States market. Yes, except that it's not repatriation. This is gold that hasn't been here. Some of it's been here properly, but a lot of it is coming in. You're seeing a large amount of gold and silver move into the United States market, and that represents several steps. The first step was that demand for gold and silver from both investors and from industrial users has been strong in the United States, stronger in the United States than it has been in Europe. So there has been a pull of precious metals into the New York market over the last year or more because of the stronger demand for physical metal in the United States. So that started it. That then spread the arbitrage, and you start seeing a higher gold price in the United States and silver price in the United States than in the London market because of the stronger demand. Then the election came in the United States. Trump won, and he started talking about tariffs on Mexico and Canada and everybody else. And there was this view that the tariffs might apply to Mexican silver and Canadian and Mexican gold. Therefore, if you waited until tariffs were imposed, you'd have to pay this import duty for gold and silver. So some banks and trading companies started moving gold and silver into the New York market. Now, the stuff in London gets reported if it's within the LBMA network of depositories in the city of London. If it's in non-LBMA registered depositories, it doesn't get reported. And the reality is that gold and silver has been entering the United States market, not only from London, but from around the world. Once the tariff scare came, some of these banks and trading companies said, let's move, the demand is in North America anyway. Let's move metal into New York earlier to protect ourselves in case tariffs are imposed on gold and silver as well as other things. So you start to see that happen. That further widened the arbitrage. And then you saw other people catching on that this was going on. And you had speculators enter the market, buying in London and selling in the United States. And the arbitrage widened even further. And so you've had this step of increases, and you have seen metal flowing into the United States. Now, that said, there are some gruesome misunderstandings about what the arbitrage is and what the EFPs are and how metal and other commodities are arbitraged all the time. And there's probably a lot of investors who are going to lose some money because they're expecting this to either be going on forever or that it's the beginning of the collapse of the paper, gold, and silver markets, which it's not. This is a market functioning the way commodity markets work all the time. You know, when there's stronger demand in one geographic market than in another, the commodity, whether it's oil or wheat or copper or gold or silver, flows from the weaker market to the more demand-intense market. And that's what's going on. It will continue for a while, but at some point it's going to reverse. And some people will be surprised. If there's no chance of the London market running out of deliverable gold and silver, if deliverable gold and silver inventories in London fell to critically low levels, the price of gold and silver in London would rise sufficiently to reverse that arbitrage and bring metal into London, both from New York and from other parts of the global market, right? So there are two points there. One is arbitrages go both ways. You won't run out of gold and silver in London. You might get to a point where gold and silver, where it's profitable for traders and others to move gold and silver into the London market. And the other takeaway is, insofar as the London gold and silver prices have not risen that sharply yet, that's an indication that the market professionals are not panicking about London running out of gold and silver. Now, if they start bidding up the price of gold and silver in London, that's an indication that you might be running low of inventories. You're not going to run out of deliverable inventories because there are always people who will ship metal in, and there's plenty of metal around the world to do that with. You know, so insofar as the prices in London have not risen sharply relative to New York, that's an indication that this isn't a problem.
Yeah, it's such a good point, Jeff. And we actually saw the exact reverse of this last year, where gold was being moved out of the West and into the East when Shanghai had the arbitrage and there was a better value to move it over there. So commodities always follow that arbitrage trade, and it will always be going on, like you say, not just in gold and silver, but in all commodities. Jeff, what we can say about gold as we've kicked off 2025 is that it had a pretty strong January. It closed the month at the highest level in the futures that we've seen on a monthly close. You made a great point to us off mic about some of the futures contracts and how they have rolled out to future months. Maybe break down how the price action marries some of those contracts changing over and what you expect to see.
Yeah, I think the major reason gold prices rose in January was the advent of the Trump administration and what they're calling it flooding the zone. You know, they're trying to overwhelm their political opposition by just coming out with a tidal wave, is the term I used this morning, a tidal wave of regulations and executive orders, many of which are unconstitutional and will be bogged down in the court system for months, if not years. You know, but there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty and concern about the increased economic and political risks brought about by the Trump administration's taking power. And you're seeing that today with, you know, Hegseth's comments that Ukraine will never enter NATO and NATO has to back off and Trump is going to start negotiating a Ukrainian settlement for Ukraine with Putin without Ukraine being involved. It's just total nonsense, right? But there's this tremendous uncertainty globally about what all this means for the economy and for political structures, both domestic and international. As a result, you see a lot of economists, including the ones at the Fed, saying, okay, a lot of these policies, insofar as they come to fruition, will be recessionary and inflationary. So we have an increasingly hostile economic environment. That means that the stock market and the bond market may be weak, that means that maybe you want to diversify some of your assets and wealth into gold and silver. So I think that's the major thing that's pushed gold prices up. Now, in addition to that, February is an actively delivered contract for the COMEX gold futures market. And if you go back into January, you had a very high volume of open interest in the February contract. That's not unusual for actively traded months. Typically, most of that metal, most of that open interest, because it's not metal per se, it's paper, it's contracts backed by metal, right? Most of that open interest typically gets rolled forward before the first delivery date, which is in the February contract is the last trading day of January. We saw that happen and the gold price rose commensurately. And it, yeah, as you said, it reached a new record high close at the end of January. That partly represented people who were short the February contract, buying back the February contract, and then selling forward in April and June futures contracts. And that roll is behind the market now. So the gold price has subsided. It was off about $20 earlier today. Meanwhile, March is an active contract for silver. And you see very high open interest in the March contract, like 523 million ounces. That will be rolled into the May contract and the July contract. It's already starting, but you will see more of that rolling into the April and the May and June, July contracts over the next 2 weeks until the last delivery day in February. Which is the last trading day in February is the first delivery date for the March contract. So you'll see a lot of traders and speculators and investors now buying back the March COMEX silver contract and selling forward in May and July. That will have the effect of pushing the February contract up over the next couple, or the March contract up over the next 2 weeks. So we expect higher silver prices over the next 2 weeks. And then it falls back. The exact same thing happened in April of 2011 when the silver price went from about $35 an ounce to $50 an ounce over the course of April as they were rolling the May contract into July. And then the price, once that was over, the first week of May, the silver price went from $50 to $32.
Interesting. Okay, so there's some maybe short-term moves that we could see. But Jeff, make sense of this whole concept for me then. If investors are looking ahead and they think that the markets could show some weakness, these tariffs are going to be bad for the markets, for the economy, so they're putting money into the precious metals, we're not seeing the markets roll over though. So is there something underneath the surface of these markets that we need to watch for that really validates that whole rotation of money out of the markets into the precious metals?
It's not so much that stock money and stock. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of money in the stock market and there's a tremendous amount of money in the bond market. And minuscule reductions in the amount of money invested in stocks but put into gold and silver can have a dynamic effect on the gold and silver prices because they are minuscule markets compared to the overall stock market. And the same is true compared to the overall bond market. So you're not necessarily seeing those markets collapse or fall or sharply. You're hearing increased chatter that there could be a 10 or 20% decline in the U.S. stock market, that, you know, most of the increase last year was the big seven stocks, many of which are highly speculative casino type stocks, Nvidia, for example. You know, so there is concern that the stock market can collapse, and that's being reflected in some money coming out of that stock market or the bond market going into gold and silver. If you started to see a more significant decline in stocks, then I think you would see a more significant increase in gold and silver prices.
Well, Jeff, you brought up the bond market. Some people have made the point that it's possible we've seen a rotation of some funds out of bonds and into precious metals as more of the safe haven because some of the bonds have been selling off pretty hard. Do you put any stock in that argument that some of the money has rotated out of bonds and into precious metals?
Yes, that's definitely, we've seen that, and it's not surprising to us. You know, it's also one of the things that's probably keeping treasury bills relatively strong. People are concerned, especially about corporate bonds, municipal bonds, state bonds, and sovereign debt that's outside of the U.S. because all, you know, outside sovereign debt outside of the U.S. has a higher risk premium than U.S. treasuries. So that's one thing. And then in terms of corporate bonds, municipal bonds, state bonds, you have several factors going on. But if you're looking at an increased risk of a significant recession and or inflation, which seems to be the growing consensus in the financial markets, then you have to worry about those bonds and the stability of the companies and local governments that are stand behind that. And then in terms of the local government bonds, the state and municipal bonds, you also have the issue that the Trump administration is talking tough to these guys too, and that could cause additional problems for state and local governments.
Jeff, make sense of this then in terms of COT reports, as you're talking about the rollover of these contracts. What are we seeing on the short end for gold, for silver, that could lead to, I guess, more of a short squeeze? And quite frankly, who's out there shorting these metals and what level are they shorting them at?
Yeah, I don't know that there's a lot of people shorting. I mean, if you look at the COTs, you've seen a big increase over the last few months on the gross and net long positions held by investors, non-commercials. And you've also seen an increase to some extent on the part of the long positions held by commercials. And that represents the fact that they're hedging their positions in the physical market. So I'm not sure that there are a lot of people shorting gold and silver right now. I mean, I think that the most institutional investors and trading companies probably are looking at gold and silver and saying that the probability of prices being higher in the near term, the next several months, is far greater than the probability or possibility of prices falling in the next few months. So no one wants to be short.
Jeff, we haven't talked to you about the platinum and palladium markets in a while, and we continue to get questions emailed into us, and we see platinum with a slight premium to palladium now. What is your outlook or the CPM's outlook on the PGMs?
Our expectation, our longer-term view, is that we wouldn't advise investors to invest in them. You have the long-term shift away from using petroleum products in cars. You know, you've got about 12, 14% of the global auto market now electric, but you also are seeing some shifts back and forth between platinum and palladium in the remaining, you know, 86% of the auto manufacturing output that is, you know, being made and sold every year. But in addition to that long-term secular shift away from using PGMs in petroleum-powered vehicles, you also have this increased concern that in a recessionary environment, people don't buy cars. So you could see a decline in auto production and sales over the next 2 years if we do go into a global recession. So there's a lot of negativity, you know, both in terms of the intermediate term, 1 to 3 years, and in the long term. You know, the saving grace is that South African producers seem to be having trouble maintaining production, but any production decline might be a few years away. So, you know, our expectation is that platinum and palladium prices remain low.
Jeff, from just the investment standpoint then, quite frankly, are we just seeing investors, whether it's resource investors or even some maybe new investors coming into the resource markets, simply being focused on gold? That's why gold seems to be outperforming pretty much everything else.
That's exactly what you're seeing.
Is there any shift that you could see from this? What is this something we've seen in the past?
You're seeing some shift to silver. And in the past, we've seen people who will invest in gold, and then they start diversifying their precious metals investments into gold mining shares, silver, silver mining shares, platinum and palladium. I'm not quite sure you'll see that as virulently this time around as in the past. You know, I think a lot of investors have moved away from investing in the mining sector, and that could just be a negative. And in addition to that, I think that you're seeing other investors saying, you know, platinum and palladium are not gold and silver. I'll invest in gold, I'll diversify into silver, but I'm not necessarily going to diversify into platinum and palladium, because those are clearly industrial commodities first and foremost, and their financial aspect is far less powerful and price influencing than is the financial characteristics of gold and silver.
Yeah, I feel like we've seen this before, even in my somewhat limited time in the resource sectors, that when gold starts to run, everybody, all the resource investors, get distracted with it. But when it peters out, then money can rotate into these smaller resource and metal sectors. But right now, boy, oh boy, it just seems like gold is taking in all that capital. And we are seeing some of that capital spread into the underlying stocks. It's right now, it seems like just a almost perfect environment for gold, which could also trickle into silver. Silver's doing okay, but not performing anywhere near what gold is doing. Jeff, it's great having you on the show. Again, Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. Please, everyone, check out the CPM Group website and follow along with all their market commentary. Everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back, focusing on the energy sector with our conversation with Dan Steffen.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.